Welcome to the Booktopia podcast. I'm John Purcell. I'm sitting here with Robert O'Hearn. Sarah McDewling sends her apologies. She's feeling a little unwell. And we're here to talk to Natalie Isaacs, who's sitting across from us, about her book, Every Woman's Guide to Saving the Planet. That's why I would like to have Sarah here, because Rob and I are dudes. I just want to point that out to everyone as a disclaimer. Not that we can't be involved in this process, but it's definitely a guide for women, because it says Every Woman's Guide to Saving the Planet on the cover. Is that right? Am I right here?
That doesn't mean you can't read it and use all the tools as well.
Excellent. Though. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
There is a bit on blokes in there.
A little thing that says that we're not anti-bloke at all. It's just it's about dialing up the strengths of women. Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about your movement so we can get a sort of background to how all this began?
Yes, so I'm the founder of 1 Million Women, and I started it about almost 10 years ago. And really, before that, I used to be a cosmetics manufacturer and nowhere myself on my own climate change journey. But the very short story is that I had this epiphany, I changed, and what did it was I got my electricity bill down by 20%. And when I saw the bill, I'd saved all this pollution and I'd saved all this money. And so after years and years of inaction, I had simply moved into the camp of action and thought, wow, I'm really powerful. I'm actually not a bystander in this. And in fact, if what I just did, which was get this my electricity down, if millions of us did the same thing, we would make a real difference. And that was the starting point of creating 1 Million Women, because I thought there must be millions and millions of women out there like me who wasn't acting for whatever reason. And if I could just tell them my story, if I could just say, look, I just did this and look at the result and now I'm going to change my life forever. If I could just get that out to other women, that would change their lives too. So, although there's a lot more to it, that was really how 1 Million Women began, was bite-sized actions.
Because it can feel overwhelming and people get paralyzed by just the enormity of the problem. And if you take out these bite-sized bits, these accomplishable little goals that you can do, which you started with, it makes it so much more approachable. And is this what this book is going to give us some ideas on how to do these bit by bit rather than tackling the whole problem in one go?
Yeah.
Did you feel that? Did you feel it was just too big to take on?
Absolutely. It was this thing of it's too overwhelming. What can I do anyway? And if you don't know enough about something, it's so much easier to do nothing. And so that was definitely me. But once I had this really easy, quick win, you know, I just did something very painless, didn't cost me any money. In fact, it saved me money. And that pulled me along this journey of profound behavior change. And that's what the book is all about. It's about showing that we are all, we are all citizens of this planet, and we all have to play our part. You know, climate change is not waiting for any of us. It is an urgent issue, and we all need to be part of the solution. And the way that we can do it as individuals, as a collective, as households, as communities, is by living it. And you can't fight for something without living it too. And that's what the book is all about, is saying that if we do bite-sized actions with these real and tangible outcomes, that will, I guarantee you, that will pull you along this road of empowerment, and it will make you want to do the next thing and the next thing. And before you know it, you are living it. You're living climate action instead of just thinking it should be somebody else's issue.
How important is the is habit in these sort of things? Changing behavior and forming habits.
Yeah, it underpins it all, because changing the way you live is actually really hard, and it's hard because we have to do it in this framework of our high consumption society. And so sometimes we can go, oh my goodness, I'm just going to, oh, I get the point. I get it. I'm just going to do everything. And then other things get thrown in your way along the way. And you go, oh, it's too hard. I'll worry about it next month. And we actually can't afford to do that. And so we have to rethink the way that we live. And there are strategies and steps to doing that. And I've lived them. And the book explains that step by step that, you know, if you take these small actions and you see these results and they're immediate, you then build your confidence and you then do bigger things and you make bigger lifestyle decisions. And because we live in a world in affluent society of overconsumption and food waste and, you know, plastics is choking our oceans and we disregard the energy we use and we drive our cars too much and all these things that are all part of the climate change story, but they're all part of how we live. And it is really about rethinking how we live and rethinking those behaviors that we actually never think about and reprogramming ourselves so that we are living with the least impact on the planet. And I think that, and you know, I say it in the book that where we have our starting point is that we have to have a love affair with the earth. And if we loved our earth like we do our family and our friends, we would care for it more. You know, we look what we love. We love living here, growing up in Australia, and I, you know, you've got the beach right on out. I live near the beach, on the beach. You know, we've got the extraordinary oceans and rainforests and country that gives us so much. We have to give back. If we love swimming in the ocean, then we need to think about all the plastic that we're using, or we love our earth. We have to think about all our food waste. And so it has to be this give and take, and we can't just keep taking from the earth. And so there's a lot in the book about how do we actually reconnect with our earth and love it like our family, and how do we make that be the foundation of how we live our lives.
Are you noting the changes? Because, you know, if you think about how we behave in the 70s and the 80s and the 90s, and there's been a lot of movements, a lot of green movements that have come and gone, a lot of changes, a lot of people have pitched battles in certain areas and gone, we're not going to let this pass and we're going to do something about this. Do you think we are changing for the better at the moment?
I think in the 10 years that One Me Women's almost been around, I have seen extraordinary change. And, okay, governments come and go. And when we started One Me Women, it was actually the halcyon days of bipartisan support. And so at government level, no. At government level, things have gone backwards. You know, you only need to see what's happening in this country right now from a political perspective, but from people rising up and actually rising above politics and getting on with it.
It seems so strange at the time when we're all kind of pulling together to make changes, the government's going in the absolute opposite direction.
It's complete opposite direction, and there's no leadership, and, you know, we have everything at our fingertips except you know, political will. But this story has changed incredibly so. Back when I started 1 Million Women, it was about explaining how we live actually does affect the planet. That was a big message that we had to find a way of communicating, because back then it was a very new thing, and it was if I turn the lights off, big deal. This is not turning the lights off is the first thing you do, but this is way beyond that. But we had to get that story out there. Now, we don't need to talk about that anymore. People, and it's a small group, but it's growing fast. People are talking about the plastics in the ocean. Just look at what's happening in terms of plastic pollution and what people are doing to fight that. And people are understanding that less is more. And I think, you know, when I first started 1 Million Women, there was a few thousand houses with solar on rooftops. Now there's 1.8 million in this country. And so we're leading the world on rooftop solar and battery storage, which wasn't even discussed back then, is now something that's real, and going off grid is something that we can actually plan for instead of it just being something that is totally unobtainable. And, you know, electric vehicles, they were just something of the future when we started 1 Million Women. So from that respect, there's extraordinary progress. But citizens knowing that we have to live with the least impact on the planet, I really believe that is, now I know that we could be living in a bubble and that I surround myself with people all the time that get this, but the idea of 1 Million Women is actually to reach women outside of the green belt and to bring them in. And that is a much easier.
You do get an indication of the success of your work when you see something like Woolies take away plastic bags. And, yeah, there's a bit of a hoo-ha amongst a small group of loud people. But, you know, when you see the people just change, and they can only do that if they see they understand your message. Like, they would only do that if they make a decision to do it. Yeah. And they go, yes, I agree with this, and I'm going to do it. I mean, I was sitting at a car park waiting for someone and watching people leave their cars and go, oh, and go back to their cars to get their bags.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, that's
and,
right.
And it was a process. And it was a few weeks after the change. And I did it about 5 or 6 times when I went in. I would go, oh, and I have to go back to get my bags from the car. But now you don't. The people, the habit's already been formed.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't know how I did it. I have my little tote bags that I've got with books on the outside of them, you know.
Yeah.
Been given to me by publishers that have been in my cupboard for years. And they've been pulled out and they're all I'm using them now in a completely different way. And I like them more. I find them much more comfortable to use than the rotten plastic bags that I used to use day in, day out.
Yeah, that's right.
And that's, what, a month, 2 months?
Yeah.
My habits have changed completely. My point of view has changed completely.
That's right. And it actually doesn't take long to change a habit. But you have all that support along the way. So, you know, you go to Woolies and you have to take your bags now.
Yeah.
And so it makes you change that behavior a lot faster.
Which is why you want the government support.
That's right.
Yeah.
And every climate action needs everybody. Mm. It needs from the top down, from the bottom up, and it needs it all to happen at the same time. And so it needs individuals. I know I said it before, but individuals, it needs communities, households, cities, countries, governments, corporates, small businesses, large businesses, schools, universities. It needs every one of us to be acting at the same time, because then we all pull each other up, and we've all got the same, you know, the same end goal, which is to, you know, and it's a serious issue. That's why I don't even know the words when you look at our current situation from a political perspective. It's not just disappointing, it's immoral, and I don't know a word to describe it, because it's just to not be 100% focused on fixing climate change. It is the biggest issue that humanity has ever faced. Is a terrible blow that we don't have that political will. And so we have to rise above it. We have to get on with it, but we have to exercise our vote. So in the book, I talk about it from every perspective, so that you have to live it. And living it is everything. It's what you do and what you say and how you exercise your right as voters and using your voice. And so come election time, climate change needs to be on the top of the agenda, and we shouldn't be voting for any politician that doesn't have it on theirs. And that's all part of this profound lifestyle change. We need a lifestyle revolution. And it doesn't mean we still don't have fun and we don't laugh. And it means that we just reprogram how we redefine the meaning of happiness. And happiness isn't more and more stuff. And happiness is about being in love with our earth and looking after it. That's all part of it. And we've kind of just gone way off track with it.
One of the things I found really wonderful about your book is the way you talk about the emotional connections. And it's not just emotional connection to the planet, but emotional connections to the actions that you do,
yeah.
Whether it's shopping or whether it's deciding to take this course of being more eco-sustainable, earth-friendly. And you talk about the rewards that come from that.
Yeah.
And that's unusual to find in a lot of these kind of books, is this idea of if you do this, then take reward from what you've actually achieved.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not just saving money. It's all these other benefits. I know when I got into putting worm farms and composts and things in my backyard years ago, I started improving my soil dramatically, and then I started getting all sorts of other benefits from my soil being better and better.
Yeah.
And my neighbour would stick his head over, are you buying soil in? It's so dark and rich. And I was like, no, this is what I do with my worm farm.
Yeah, exactly, great. Exactly. It's extraordinarily rewarding when you are and empowering, when you're whether it's worm farms or compost, or whether you're at the shopping centre and your whole shopping basket is just full of food without any packaging, or all those things give me an immense satisfaction. And it's just about rethinking those things.
Absolutely.
As
We had Robin Williams, the science broadcaster reporter, in here last week, and he was proudly boasting he bought some clothes in the 90s. He doesn't need to buy anymore.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly.
he's got his headphones held together by sticky tape, yeah. And all that stuff. He's quite happy. He said, I can use my money for going on a trip now.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, because I live this life of it wasn't that I didn't care. It was just that I had my head buried in the sand and didn't think that what can one person really do to make a difference? And that was kind of what I was thinking. And because climate change is so overwhelming, you just go, oh, this is not my, I can't fix this. And, now I've forgotten why I was telling you that.
Because we're about the clothes and reusing the clothes and
I've lost my train of thought, but anyway, I was going somewhere with that, but sorry. Yeah.
Can I ask you? You've got a women's movement. The book is called Every Woman's Guide to Saving the Planet. Are you like, why women? Like, out of there's two lots.
Yeah.
Was it because of women's role as change makers within groups? Or what was it? Why did you go down the women's path rather than including
everyone?
Yeah.
A couple of things. One, when I had this epiphany and I literally woke up one day different, and I thought, okay, I'm going to do something about this. And when I did all my research, I didn't really see anything online at the time, and I was on the internet trying to find stuff that I could really take on board after I just saved all this money and pollution through cutting my electricity bill, and there wasn't anything that spoke to me personally. And so I thought that there was a gap there, that there was a lot on climate change, millions of organisations out there doing amazing stuff, but nothing that just spoke to me about what I had just done, which was change my life, from electricity to food waste to overconsumption. Yeah, now I remember what I was going to say before. I'll come back to that. And then for 25 years, I was a cosmetics manufacturer, and I was, women were 95% of, what I was, you know, manufactured cosmetics for. And I think that going into an area where I didn't have much confidence, you know, I was learning it as I was going. I felt very confident about the empowerment of women because that's what I was doing for 25 years. So that was a little bit of it. But also when I was doing my research, I saw that women are really incredibly powerful. We make 85% of the consumer decisions that affect the household's carbon footprint. We are huge consumers. So we make 51% of not just the population here, but as a global population. And I could not find anything out there that spoke directly to the strengths of women, particularly in this country. So that intersection of climate action and women's empowerment was just not there. And so I saw this gaping hole and thought, I'm going to fill it. And so, you know, as I was saying to you earlier, it's not that this is an anti-bloke movement and we love men involved. It was just trying to find, it was dialing up the strengths of women and finding a way that was about the empowerment of women. And as change makers, women are extraordinary. And that doesn't mean men aren't. It's just that there is something incredible about, women, coming together to fight, you know, I don't want to call this a cause because this isn't a cause. This is the fabric of society. But there's something extraordinarily powerful about that. So there was all of that going on. But I think it was mainly that there was this whole about just finding something that spoke to women. Yeah, so that's why we made it a women's movement. And I think also that women, I think for 1 million women, because we've gone from, you know, zero to now we're 800,000 women from around the world, and our blog last year got 4.5 million views. And, yeah, and I think that we were catapulted into the main arena quite quickly because we were women supporting women. Mm-hmm. And women are on the front line. Women and children in developing countries are literally on the front line of climate change. You know, they are the first affected. And so as a woman from an affluent society, I also felt that I need to do everything I possibly can for women all around the world. So if I am changing the way I live, that is supporting women that in developing countries, that are the most vulnerable. Isn't that the very least that I could do? So it's all those reasons for why women.
And we want to return to our discussion about the consumption. Yeah, we're talking about Robin Williams and his shirts from the 90s.
Yeah, I lost my train of thought. But where I was coming with that was, I was learning this as I go, as I was saying, but there was this one point, I was in a meeting about 3 years into 1 million women, and I thought I had already done an extraordinary amount of changes in my life. And we're in this meeting and we were trying to work out, we're with our, creative agency who gave us all this stuff for free. They created the brand for free. And we were sitting there talking about where we were 3 years on and the way we were communicating to women. And it was just this thing of, that we talk about, solutions instead of problems and, empowerment instead of guilt. And we were trying to work out what is this next thing that we could really talk about? What will really hit the heart and help you understand? And I am coming back to the Robin Williams thing. But it was this. And so we decided on this less is more, and that if we could communicate that less is more, that that owning something for 30 years and looking after it and wearing it,
yeah,
you know, time and time again is got so much more richness to it than buying the new trend every season to try and keep up. And so we started to talk about this concept, less is more, and that was still kind of up there in my head. And I think this is a point with profound behavior change.
Yeah.
You can have it all swimming around up here, but to make it real, it has to travel to your heart. Because until it travels to your heart, you're still only talking about it in not gratuitously, but to make something stick, it's got to go from your head to your heart. And I was in this meeting talking about less is more, thinking that I'm already, you know, amazing because I'd done all this stuff. And it hit me like this. Like, honestly, it felt like a second epiphany. It just hit me that less was actually more, and that I had thought I was living this, but I actually wasn't. And it was like this freedom. I came out of that meeting, I'll never forget it. It was like this freedom and this weight off my shoulders that I didn't, even though I was trying to navigate my way through, I'd started One Million Women, I still hadn't got less was more. And once that, I really understood it, I even went deeper into behavior change and overconsumption and looking after things forever so you just wear them.
That is such an important point.
Yeah.
The continuum of an object that, when you've got it, it's not just yours. It should be whoever has it in 50 years' time or 100 years' time.
Exactly. And if you're talking fashion, there are some fashion houses out there at the moment that have 400 micro seasons a month. It's like, it's crazy. It's crazy. And so the fast fashion industry is so out of control that a third of the fashion that is produced in the world does not get even used. It, and I don't know if you heard the other week about Burberry, but
yeah,
fashion houses burn their clothes because they don't know what else to do with them, and they don't want to flood the market with them, and because they're just making this, everything is fast. And so Robin Williams, you know, his slow fashion approach is what we all should adopt. Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming in and talking with us. It's been absolutely wonderful.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you. Thanks for all the support.
And you can get hold of Everyone's Guide to Saving the Planet at booktopia.com.au right now.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.